Listeners ask WPR for information about COVID vaccines for kids this year, and we've got some answers. It's Monday, October 13th, and this is Wisconsin Today Morning News. Good morning, I'm Alex Crow. Coming up on the show today, a Wisconsin native fell and injured himself during a hike in Norway. We'll hear from him about how he survived for 6 days before being rescued. And Wisconsin farmers are waiting on a bailout from the Trump administration, but they say it's unlikely to make up for lost exports. Stay with us.
Thank you to the donors who make Wisconsin Public Radio possible. There are more than 50,000 of you. Your generosity delivers essential news, thought-provoking conversations, and inspiring music to listeners all over Wisconsin and beyond. Your support makes a difference in people's lives every day. Thank you.
For some Wisconsin parents, getting a hold of COVID shots for their kids has been challenging. Several wrote to WPR's Wisconsin asking how they can access the pediatric vaccine for their kids. Sarah Lear has more.
Wisconsin's health department is urging anyone over 6 months old to get the updated COVID shot. And the department put out a standing order intended to make the shot available to anyone in that age range without a prescription. Despite that directive, Lisa Ho of Madison said several local pharmacies would not vaccinate her 3-year-old son against COVID without a prescription.
I felt like I had to really do a lot of my own legwork.
Ho was eventually able to get the vaccine for her son through UW Health in early October. UW Health says it's now scheduling COVID vaccine appointments for anyone over 6 months old. In contrast, CVS is offering it at the company's Minute Clinics to kids who are at least 18 months, and Walgreens says it's providing it in Wisconsin to kids 3 years and older. Sarah Lear, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Attorneys behind two lawsuits challenging Wisconsin's congressional districts are urging the state Supreme Court to form a judicial panel to hear their cases. The lawsuits from the liberal firms Law Forward and Elias Law Group allege Wisconsin's 8 districts are gerrymandered and must be redrawn. While justices rejected similar arguments earlier this year, the liberal firms say a 2011 law written by state Republicans requires the Supreme Court to appoint panels of circuit court judges to rule over the cases. Attorney Luke Berg of the conservative Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty says the map challenges should be dismissed regardless of what justices think about the 2011 law.
Whether this requires a 3-judge panel or not, it's so procedurally improper and so meritless that you should just dismiss it now and save everyone the time.
The gerrymandering lawsuits come as multiple states work to redraw their congressional maps ahead of next year's battle for control of the House of Representatives. Scientists recently discovered a fossilized leech that pushed back the history of the species by millions of years. As Steph Conquest Ware reports, the find was made possible by a unique trove of fossils discovered in Wisconsin 4 decades ago.
It's called the Waukesha biota. Researchers salvaged the thin layer of mudstone from a sedimentary deposit at the Waukesha Quarry. Scientists say it is unique because it preserved rare fossils of soft-bodied creatures. Today, most of the original biota is gone, but researchers are still making new discoveries from the UW Geology Museum's Waukesha Biota Collection. That includes a recently discovered leech that is more than 400 million years old. Carrie Eaton is the museum's curator.
I think it sparked curiosity to think about the fact that our streets and sidewalks and roads that we walk on every day have these ancient treasures just right underneath our feet.
The Waukesha Biota Collection includes more than 2,000 fossils. Steph Conquest Ware, Wisconsin Public Radio.
A new study on Lake Bula in southeastern Wisconsin indicates that wake boats should operate in deeper waters and further from shore. The Lake Bula Management District hired engineering firm Terra Vigilus Environmental Services Group to conduct this study. The group examined what happens to the lake bottom and shoreline when recreational powerboats operated at varying speeds, depths, and distances. The group tested 4 types of vessels, including wake boats. The study says wake boats stirred up sediments and plants at depths of 15 and 21 feet. Steve Radke with the Wisconsin Water Sports Coalition says the study was based and relied on video rather than data to assess impacts.
We see a video and we make the inference that there's an impact. We don't know that.
The study also recommended wake boats stay at least 500 feet from shore. The chair of the Lake Bula Management District says a local ordinance is needed to restrict wake boat operation. This summer, the London-based climate journalist Alec Loon survived for 6 days alone on a remote Norwegian mountain after he was injured in a dramatic fall. Loon is a UW-Madison alumnus and hails from Stoughton. He shared his survival story with host Rob Ferret on WPR's Wisconsin Today.
Yeah, it's been a rough ride, and to be honest, the ride is still going on to an extent because my legs are kind of still healing from all of this, and I'm still pretty incapacitated. I can walk around, take a few steps, but, you know, when I go out of the house, I go in a wheelchair, and my legs are kind of trying to recover from both breaking the femur, but then also the frostbite injuries to my feet.
Well, if you're willing to relive the experience with us a little bit, you're someone who's done a lot of hiking in far northern conditions, plus your reporting. What ended up happening on this hike in Norway?
Well, in short, I basically went ahead when I probably should have turned back. I had a bit of an equipment malfunction. You know, I wanted to backpack around the northern half of this glacier in this national park. So it was the first day. I headed up the valley, saw the first hung of the glacier where, this is amazing ice fall that's coming down the mountain. There's waterfalls around it. And I kind of took a very faint path up through the brush, had to scramble a lot. I wanted to get a bit further before I camped for the night because I was going to go into the next valley the next day and I wanted to get over towards that valley. What was really the problem was, I think, was that my boot had torn apart. The sole started coming off my hiking boot. You know, it was the first day out. I really didn't want to go back to the city. So rather than turning around, I used some athletic tape that I had to tape up that sole, to tape it to the boot. But, you know, in doing that, I had this tape kind of on the bottom of the sole. So I think it reduced the traction a bit, is my hypothesis. Anyway, I was coming along this really steep slope, and suddenly I took a step and slipped, and I'm not sure exactly how I slipped, but the next thing I knew, I was flying down the mountain. First I was sliding, then I was rolling, then I was bouncing off of rocks and stuff and just picking up more and more and more speed. And I thought, this is it. This is the moment. This is really, really bad. You know, this is like what you see in the movies or read about in books. You know, this is the start of something really bad.
So you were there ultimately 6 days. Broke a femur, among other injuries. What kind of things over the course of that were going through your mind as you were, A, trying to stay alive, and B, hoping to be found in this remote area?
Yeah, so my fall came to an end when I crashed into a rock and snapped my femur in half. Also fractured my pelvis, fractured a couple vertebrae in my back. So basically, yeah, I kind of grabbed my backpack, made sure I had that with me, slid down the mountain a little bit more. And just then, you know, once I had come to a full stop, put my head on my backpack and just passed out. When I woke up the next morning is when I really took stock of the situation. And I looked up the mountain and I saw that some of my gear was kind of spread out. And so I thought, okay, I need to get up to my stuff and find my cell phone because I've got my backpack with me, but there's more stuff up the mountain. And that's, you know, that I tried to scoot up the mountain, but I just couldn't. It was too painful and didn't have enough force to push myself up the mountain. So I ended up having to just stay exactly where I was, basically. I thought, okay, well, I'm probably going to have to just stay here and wait for rescue to come, essentially, because I can't move out. And so then I just started thinking about, you know, logically kind of what I needed to do next. I had my camping gear in my backpack, took out my sleeping pad inflated that, took out my sleeping bag so I had something to keep me warm at night. And I knew that I was going to have to last 4 days because it was 4 days until my flight home. But, you know, yeah, of course, there were a lot more adventures in store over what ended up being 6 days up on the mountain.
You can find the full interview with Alec Loon at WPR.org/Wisconsin Today. Coming up, farmers in Wisconsin and the Midwest say even a promised bailout from the Trump administration won't make up for lost export sales and rising costs. Stay with us.
If you've never given before, but you look forward to listening to WPR every day, that's a sign it's time to donate. It means that WPR is important to you, and you are important to us. We're listener-supported radio, which means we count on money from people like you to make the programs possible. Make your first ever contribution today at WPR.org. Thank you.
And finally, the Trump administration is promising billions in a bailout for farmers. Last week, the Federal Agriculture Secretary said plans are on hold due to the government shutdown, but that a, quote, significant program to help our farmers is on the way after the government reopens. This comes as the trade war with China has cost farmers one of their biggest markets, but crop prices are also down while the cost of farming is way up. For Harvest Public Media, WPR's Joe Schultz reports on what the bailout will mean for the farm economy.
On the cusp of fall, Zach Soltvedt looks over a plot of corn on his family farm in Seymour, Wisconsin, and he's feeling good about what he sees.
It's still nice and green yet. We haven't seen any fungus come in through here at all. On this plot, we're expecting a pretty good yield out of it.
And he's not alone in expecting a good crop. The U.S. Department of Agriculture projects corn production nationwide will be up 13% from last year. Several states expect to see record-high yields for both corn and soybeans. But Chad Hart, an agricultural economist at Iowa State University, says strong production tends to drive crop prices down. Those low prices, along with trade uncertainty and high input costs, are cutting deeply into farm profits.
A lot of what the farmers could control, they did and did well, which is leading to the really strong production. But almost everything that's outside of their control has moved against them this year.
That includes President Donald Trump's sweeping tariffs. China, which bought around half of U.S. soybean exports last year, halted all purchases in retaliation. That's left farmers with few options to sell their beans, and is why the Trump administration is offering them a bailout. The administration is reportedly eyeing between $10 and $15 billion in aid to farmers. President Trump has said he wants to use tariff revenues to fund the aid. But will it be enough?
It's not going to fix the lost market problems that we're talking about.
That's Jonathan Kappas, a professor of agricultural policy at the University of Illinois.
And worse, it could harm farmers in the long run if, for example, costs stay high or we plant soybeans for a market that doesn't exist.
During the first Trump administration, farmers received more than $20 billion to make up for trade disruptions due to tariffs. Matt Rayberg is with the Wisconsin Soybean Association. He says the soybean market never fully recovered after losing ground with China during that first trade war.
We never regained that lost ground. In fact, China went shopping for a new supplier. We kind of became a little less reliable to them. And so they went to mainly South America and started buying their soybeans there.
Rayberg farms corn, soybeans, and wheat in Wisconsin, near the Illinois border. He views bailout programs as a temporary fix.
We want markets. Markets are consistent. We can bet on them. When you go to these ad hoc bailout programs, they definitely help, but it's kind of like putting a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound.
And some experts, including Kappas, the University of Illinois professor, worry that a bailout could keep production costs high.
If all these payments do is pass right through from the farmer to the fertilizer companies and the seed companies to the landlords, then the farmer's still stuck in this situation where the market isn't there, but the costs are not adjusting for what the new market reality is.
According to the USDA, farmers' fertilizer and labor costs are up 37 and 47% respectively since 2020. Back on his farm in Wisconsin, Soltvedt says farmers can deal with low crop prices if fertilizer, seed, and equipment prices also come down. but they haven't for years.
It seems like it's just becoming more and more of a gap there lately that we can't get out from underneath.
Like most farmers, he'd rather see good markets to sell his crops rather than a check from the government.
Not a single one of us are in favor of receiving those payments. Obviously, we all accept them because it's kind of to keep us going for the next year, but we don't love seeing that kind of subsidies come through.
Saltvet says federal aid payments for farm losses are kicking the can down the road instead of fixing the problem. I'm Joe Schultz, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is a collaboration of public media newsrooms in the Midwest and Great Plains, including WPR. And of course, we'll end with a quick check of your forecast. A little bit of light rain in eastern Wisconsin to start the day today, eventually clearing with highs in the 60s and 70s today. Mostly clear overnight with lows down into the 30s and 40s. And that'll do it for this Monday. Thanks so much for joining us for Wisconsin Today Morning News. I'm your host, Alex Crow, and our producer today was Courtney Everett. As always, have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you again soon.